Welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this conversation, I have a really interesting discussion with birth mum Charlotte and adoptive mum Kerry. It is a unique story and one that left me quite speechless. And when I say unique, in terms of people that will come forward and discuss these kinds of things with us. Charlotte and Kerry have established a relationship in the hope of it benefiting their son. And what began as a Facebook message has now developed into something clearly quite special for everyone. Whilst it's still early days for them all, Kerry felt it right that Charlotte should always be involved in their son's life, and with support on both sides, they have embarked on a more open adoption. Both mums were a joy to talk to, and I don't mind admitting that to some eye leakage from myself during this conversation. It would spoil it for me to say much more before you listen. We hope you enjoy this conversation, and if you have a story you'd like to share, then why not drop us a line on any of our social media channels. And whilst you're there, if you could leave a review on the podcast app, we'd really appreciate it. So I'm joined by Charlotte and Kerry today on Adoption Conversations. Hi both, and thank you for joining us. This will be interesting because it's the first time that we've done I've interviewed two people at once, so it's got the potential to go really well or really bad. But thank you for joining us. It's already gone really bad because I couldn't record it the first time we started it. So I like to admit my mistakes. So first of all, Charlotte, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. So I'm Charlotte. I'm the birth mum to our son. Thank you for allowing me to join in. I feel for me it's important to kind of express how, as a birth parent, there is a lot of negative stereotypes and stereotism around it that's put on by the media and by professionals, and how, especially, I was told about post-adoption contact and how it's completely changed, not just for the benefit of myself, but also for our son. That is,
And Kerry.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, yeah. So my name's Kerry. I adopted our son James when he was 13 months old, and he's 4 at the end of the month. So it's been a long time. It's been quite a while. So I'm here today because basically what Charlotte said, just because there is a sort of stigmatism out there and it's a really terrifying subject. Mm. I think for a lot of adoptive parents, the thought of contact, even sometimes just a letterbox contact, can be really scary. Mm. But for me, this whole thing's been just a really positive experience. So I just want to share that a bit more widely.
I think it's fair to say, it is fair to say that it's very recently become apparent that contact can work in a number of different ways, and it can be really positive. I mean, it's not, let's face it, it's not for everybody. I mean, we have to say that from the beginning, don't we? You know, you guys, obviously, from the stuff that I've read very briefly, as I admitted, I've not done too much research on you, because I like to be as shocked as anybody by hearing stories, but you both seem to kind of get on very well, and you both seem to be working for the benefit of your son. And I love how you say our son as well, because that's how adoption has moved on in a lot of ways, but you're both still quite young yourselves. Well, you look both still quite young. I don't know if you are. You might be in your late 60s, but you look young for it. So. But I guess that's kind of, we have to change that narrative around contact. Would you both agree with that, Charlotte, first?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I mean, obviously, from my perspective, I never thought I would see my son, like our son, again. Obviously, at the time, it was very daunting. The idea that it can change for the positive of both families. Mm. And even that intermediate family, if there's been, like, the foster carers as well, it's always for the benefit of the child.
Yeah. And Kerry, I'm guessing that, like, I'm trying to think about, I mean, bearing in mind I adopted 15 years ago and my older sons are now adults. So it's very different back then. But I'm guessing that there was still a kind of narrative when you were going through the preparation course
Kerry about this contact and how it would work and how it would either be letterboxed or it'd be letterboxed and direct contact. Is that still the case, or is that kind of moved on a little bit?
I mean, to be honest, they didn't really talk much about direct contact when we were going through the process. It was very much emphasised that you should, if possible, and if it's safe to do so, you should meet birth parents if they're agreeable to that, which we always said we would do. And they really obviously pushed the letterbox contact and the positives of that. Direct contact wasn't something that really came up at all throughout the sort of process. It wasn't something that we even thought about at that point. Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? So it's even... what are we talking, 5 years ago here? 4 years?
Less than 3 years ago.
Right, so less than three. So even then, it still wasn't... It's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go into the kind of background of of why your son was adopted and all that sort of stuff, because I think that's irrelevant. But at what point was there this kind of thing that made you... Who approached who first? I mean, you know, let's just kind of go with the conversation here. Who approached who? How did it work? What was the starting point and how did it kind of flow?
So I approached Charlotte earlier this year, mostly because of lockdown and the fact that I just hadn't got around to writing our letterbox contact. And I knew that she'd probably be a bit worried that she hadn't heard from us.
Yeah.
And also I separated from my our son's dad as well.
Okay.
So I just wanted to sort of give her a heads up, let her know what was going on. So I found her on social media and reached out to her just to say that I'm really sorry, but the letter's going to be a bit late, and I've just realised that that was back in July and I still haven't sent it, so I'm really sorry, Charlotte.
I shouldn't laugh, sorry.
For that. I'm hoping this is a little bit better than just letterbox contact, so hopefully that makes up for it. And I think the conversation just flowed. But actually, Charlotte and I met nearly 3 years ago now, shortly after James came home. And we met again earlier this year, which Charlotte might want to speak about later. But even going into that meeting, I had it in my head that actually direct contact is something I want to do, because I realised I was really excited about seeing her, and I see her as such a positive person in my life that it didn't seem fair that I get to look forward to seeing her and get to see her and interact with her and he doesn't.
Yeah.
And so when we started talking back in July, it was just agreed then, you know what, if she's happy to do it, let's just go for it.
Wow, okay. And what was it like for you, Charlotte? I mean, getting that message, I mean...
It left me shocked at first, because obviously when it was decided that adoption was the process, I made it very clear in my head that he was no longer mine. He was always going to be our son.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it very clear that whoever his adoptive parents were going to be, I wanted to meet them.
Mm-hmm.
When obviously we had the letterbox contact, and Kerry's always been so amazing and great. I'm so grateful for what she's sent. And then, so July looking at that little red dot just on my messenger, and I'm like, okay. And then I saw the name and I saw her face. I'm like, what do I do? Because obviously we're told that we're not to go looking.
Yeah.
It's obviously... it's the safety practice. So I did kind of freak out. I spent the night crying to my friend, what do I do? Do I mention it? Don't I mention it? Is this the, hi Charlotte, we're stopping contact? Or is it, hi Charlotte, because obviously COVID had come up.
Yeah.
And the whole pre-process is like, oh my God, are they safe? That's all I just want, are they safe?
Mm-hmm.
I'd not long had spinal surgery as well, so another huge wave. And then just reading it, I was like, oh my God, this is the message that I never thought I'd ever receive. But even thinking about it now, it's because it was that turning point. And I remember meeting Kerry again like this February, just before I was involved with Panto. And that alone, it was walking into that room, it was like I just met my best friend who I hadn't seen for years.
I mean, it's worthwhile saying, just to give you a little break there, because you're obviously tears of happiness, has to be said. I can see you both. Obviously, listeners can't, but it's safe to say that you both get quite emotional talking about this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a surprise. I'm not saying that's a surprise. I'm just saying that, you know, it's worthwhile pointing out because you're both kind of, Kerry looked quite horrified that it made you feel like that, I think, in some ways.
Really, really bad. It didn't really occur to me that sending that message would cause so much sort of stress and upset. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I'm quite an impulsive person. I don't always think things through. So for me, it was just I need to send it now just to get it done, get it out the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I knew, and actually, because I knew that I'm in touch with the foster carers still as well, and I know that their daughter has a mutual friend with Charlotte as well. So yeah. I had asked her, I said, oh, can you just sort of prompt the mutual friend, because Charlotte might not even know the messages come through, because they sometimes go into hidden folders or whatever.
Yeah, they go to spam folders, don't they? Yeah, even on Messenger.
So I just said, oh, can you just sort of prompt her? But yeah, it never really occurred to me at the time that it might cause upset, and that's really maybe quite sad to hear. So I'm sorry, Charlotte.
Don't apologize. It was the best message I've ever received.
But I mean, I just want to echo what she said as well, that, you know, when we've met, it has been like best friends meeting up, which is, you know, what I've said about how it's not fair that I get to look forward to that and that he didn't. Mm. So, you know, she's such an amazing person. So,
I mean, it comes across that you both have a good relationship, even, you know, without your son being in the middle of it. Yeah. You both seem to get on. You both seem to. When did you click? When did that happen? Or has it just taken time, or?
For me, I would say it first clicked when I first met Kerry.
Mm.
And I'm very open with people's views and that.
Yeah.
And to learn from just that first initial meeting with Kerry and her partner, it was weird because there was so much I could feel we had in common.
Right.
It's only got weirder the amount we do have in common. It's scary at points.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking back to when you put that thing on Facebook about pizza, and we both had gone to Pizza Hut on the same night and ordered exactly the same meal.
Really?
It's that level
okay.
of freaky. Yeah, we have a lot.
Oh,
of
problems. Okay. That is quite freaky, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
But same. I mean, I guess I mean that. But equally, that must have been a shock to you both as well, having that kind of level of, I don't know, connection?
Yeah, it wasn't something I expected. I mean, when we were going through the process and we had our sort of workshops and everything, we did meet a birth parent. And I think the whole point of the exercise is to obviously try and show you that, you know, these are just real people that sometimes had some really tragic backgrounds or whatever. Mm. They're not bad people. So you need to get that vision out of your head that a birth parent is a bad person.
Yeah.
So we completely went into it with an open mind. Mm. Always, you know, we'd had sort of reports and everything, like his report had some information on Charlotte on it.
Yeah.
And even from reading that, we knew, oh, you know what, she just sounds like a really special, lovely person.
Mm.
But it's like meeting a soulmate. It was that level of connection that we felt. And yeah, I think we both could tell from the first meeting right away, it was like having a best friend.
Yeah.
But it just helps that we have so much in common, I think, as well. Like, besides, we were both quite bookish people. That's probably all we have in common, actually, saying that. Both really into our books.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it just needs one thing, but then other things come from it. So in terms of your son then, I mean, you know, I'm struggling with my question there, sorry. Kerry, how did you prepare him?
So it didn't really take much preparation. We'd always spoken. I mean, like I said, he was 13 months when we adopted him. So we spoke really openly from the start, because even though he was too young to understand, we just knew if we talk about it now, it's going to be normal for him.
Yeah.
It started off actually every night in the bath. Every night in the bath, I just talked to him and remind him about sort of what happened and everything. And we'd agreed when we met Charlotte, she asked not to be referred to as tummy mummy, because I think a lot of adopted parents use that terminology. She wasn't comfortable with it, which was great because we weren't particularly either.
Mm-hmm.
So we just sort of reminded him he grew, as you say, he grew in Charlotte's tummy and in my heart. And we just sort of say that to him,
mm-hmm.
Just always from the start reminding him that he had this sort of like this another parent, basically.
Yeah.
And we just, as time went on, as he started to get older and a bit more understanding, we started to link the story in a bit, how, you know, Charlotte loved him very much, but he couldn't stay with her. He went to foster parents to, you know, they looked after him. but they needed to find him like a forever mummy and daddy, so that's when they found us for him. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to actually preparing him to meet her, it didn't take much preparation because she was a household name. It's someone we talked about all the time. We've got her photo up. I mean, we're on video here, but she's right. Charlotte's staring right at me now, right next to me. We have a photo from that first meeting.
Yeah.
Which he'd sleep with in his bed sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. take it to bed with him. So it didn't take much preparation. It's like, oh, actually, we're just going to, go see Charlotte. Are you happy with that? And he was like absolutely excited. So. Yeah, it just seemed like the next natural progressive step.
Yeah, and Charlotte, probably a little bit different for you. I mean, how did you prepare yourself? And were you able to get the kind of support that you needed to be able to kind of, because it must have been nerve-wracking. I'm assuming. I don't know.
So many thoughts go through your head. Mm. There's positive and there's negative thoughts. So the positive is like, I'm getting this opportunity that I'm really fortunate to have.
Yeah.
But also there's still that niggle in the back of your head that really, like, it doesn't overwhelm it, but it does play on what if he sees me and then just completely blanks, even though I know Kerry had... like explained to him who I was, that he was always known who I am.
Yeah.
It was still that fear mm-hmm. around it. Most of my support actually came from Google, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Because, COVID has...
Yes, of course.
...organization that facilitate Letterboxd. Obviously, they weren't really able to provide... They gave a lot of good conversations over the phone and like be prepared that this could happen, that could.
Mm.
And in the end, I overthink way too much. And in the end, I just took that moment in for what it was and it was beautiful.
Yeah. I keep forgetting about COVID being in the midst of this as well. So, you could have chosen a better time, Kerry, really.
I'm just so inconsiterate. That's what I do. Oh, I should have mentioned as well, actually, when you said about preparation, and what we did do is after that initial message, we scheduled a video chat between it was me and Charlotte, along with my James's dad and his older brother. So Charlotte had obviously met me and James's dad. She hadn't met his older brother before, who was my stepson.
Okay.
So we had the initial chat, sort of just us four, which was really nice. And then from there, we said, I think it's about a month before we had the sort of planned meeting.
Mm.
So we said, why don't we do just a weekly call, then like a weekly FaceTime call with James, so he can get to see her and sort of get familiar with her and everything. So they sort of had that face to face from there, so that he recognised her anyway, but he'd had that interaction with her.
So
that was sort of main. And even now, actually, occasionally we still schedule FaceTimes occasionally, but he'll also just say, oh, can I talk to Charlotte? I'm like, well, I'll message her. I'm sure she'll say yes. So
I guess by building that relationship as well, I mean, there's levels of respect for each other as well. I mean, there must be, you come across as friends. That's the first thing. But, obviously, it can be an easy friendship at times, but it sounds like it could potentially be an easy friendship in terms of where your son's concerned. Does that make sense? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it makes sense, but I would say I don't think there's ever been a part of it that's felt difficult for me. It's always felt very easy. It always felt like the right thing to do. I never had any doubts about it from those sort of initial conversations with my husband. When, like I said, when we met back in February and I said, oh, would you be happy for us to sort of do this face-to-face contact? And he was like, I think I would. What you said about being respectful, I think that's the really key thing for me. So Charlotte is the most overly respectful person I've ever met. And it just, that respect goes both ways. I have so much respect for her. But I mean, I said she'll send me a message saying like, oh, is it okay if I bring him a birthday card?
Yeah.
Like, well, of course you can. Like, he's your son too. But I mean, I can completely see where she's coming from.
Mm.
But it is that level of respect. And the way when she talks about us, she calls us his mum and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a beautiful thing to hear her say, because I'll always refer to her as well, as she's James's mum.
Yeah.
It's just
Oh, I just felt something coming out of my eye there. Sorry.
Well, Have you been floods by the end?
No, you won't. No, I'm going to put my, my big boy pants on now. I guess my next question then is to you, Charlotte, and what it felt like on the actual day.
On the day of meeting James?
Yeah.
I think I went through the whole cycle of emotions. I don't think there was an emotion I didn't feel.
Yeah.
Even from having just those video chats beforehand, there was the comfort and the reassurance that seeing him, I always knew, like, Kerry and Martin were just brilliant. I've got respect and admiration for them. It's a really hard thing to describe because it comes from so deep inside. Mm-hmm. It was to see him like happy, and that then, yeah, the whole morning was just literally spent, is he happy? Is he well? Right up until that moment where I first saw him, just, it's so hard to explain. Fear, there was still fear though.
Yeah.
And the trust is there. I've got all the trust in the world for him. It's horrid because going through the process, it kind of chipped away. And unfortunately, that still doesn't really go.
Yeah.
There's comfort and the reassurance that I know that's not. Mm-hmm. Going to happen in our situation, hopefully.
Yeah.
But I just remember crying a lot.
Well, I think you're entitled to be fair. I think what I was kind of thinking there was this kind of narrative from the long lost family thing of, oh, you know, the kind of just everything being very happy and stuff like that. But it's very different, isn't it? When it's kind of. Especially when he's so young, because he is still quite young, isn't he? You know, let's face it. And it's quite recent.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, I think the reason he was so young was the reason to do it now. It seems like almost now or never thought. And actually, another one thing you are sort of told as you're going through the process is that, you know, having the relationship with the foster carers is a really positive thing for the child. And I know you said obviously you won't go into the reasons why James was adopted, but
unless you wanted to.
All I can say is there was absolutely nothing that Charlotte had done that would make James not want to know her as he got older. And it just seemed, okay, so what's the best situation, having him know her for as long as he can remember, when she's just this normal person in his life, or wait until he's 14 screaming at me, "You're not my real mum," and sort of going off to try and find himself, and needing, like, it's going to be a lot more traumatic for him in that way. This hasn't been traumatic for him. It's been a completely natural thing for him. So I think it really was the right time to do it. But he is young enough to not remember not knowing her.
So my next question then is for you, Kerry. In terms of your son, do you think it's helped him to actually, I know you talked about him and, you know, your letterbox, and obviously you got photographs and all that stuff, but do you think it's helped him, me and Charlotte?
They've only met the once, I mean, we have two more meetings planned for the end of this year, sort of around his birthday and around Christmas.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Well,
Don't say anything, they'll get you arrested.
No, we were just saying about how, you know, children can move between houses of their parents, aren't they? So there we go. We do have something planned up close to Christmas, which hopefully will go through.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it just, it's definitely been a positive thing for him. And I think it's been positive for his brother. Well, his brother isn't adopted. He's my stepson. I think he wasn't a part of those sort of initial meetings. He never got to meet Charlotte, and yet she's this massive part of our lives.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of helped him. I mean, him and Charlotte really hit off as well. So I think that really helped. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he did insult her friend by accusing him of eating all the sausage rolls. But other than that, it's just, it has benefited. I think, like, just him knowing about her has benefited for him, because if you talk to him about adoption, he knows about it, he understands it. You know, you can just sort of fire off random questions at him. Yeah. he knows I'm his mum. And if I say, okay, but who was your mum first? He'd be like, well, Charlotte, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he knows all that. And I think having this sort of open relationship with her is going to be really beneficial going forward.
Yeah. So, and sorry, Charlotte, I'm not leaving you. I'm going to come to you in a minute. But I wanted to ask Kerry, because I feel like this sometimes when I think about parenting my own sons. You know, I've got three sons from two different families. And their family has always felt like a part of me. Do you feel that Charlotte and others are a part of you because you know a little bit or a lot about them, and the fact that, you know, they're biologically kind of connected to your son and stuff like that? Do you feel like that, or is that just kind of...
Absolutely. I mean, from the day we met, Charlotte has felt like a sister to me, and even more so now. She is my sister, she is my family. We are just one big, really weird, crazy family. But even, you know, my parents, they haven't met Charlotte, and hopefully these meetings at the end of the year go ahead, they'll be meeting her then. But even they, you know, my mum gets really emotional about it, and my dad probably gets a bit emotional about it. He might not let it show, but he probably does.
He's a man.
No, he's a very open, affectionate man, actually. I just think she just feels like a part of the family. She always has. Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right there.
And what I'm not struggling. I've got questions written down by the side here, and I said to you both, this is a conversation, it's your conversation, but I just feel like it'd be a shame not to ask you questions. If they're popping into my head, they're going to be popping into other people's heads. So if there is anything that you want to say, we can cover it, no problem. But I wanted to know from you, Charlotte, how has it helped you being able to meet your son again, and in terms of knowing that this isn't sorry, forgive me, I'll rewind a little bit. How has it felt meeting him again? And then secondly from that, with all your doubts, because you've said already, you know, you were kind of wary and a little bit worried and concerned, and, you know, didn't think it was going to happen and all that sort of stuff. You know, thinking about the future and how you're going to be a part of his life, how does that make you feel? So I'll just recap on my question there, because I've asked two questions and the second one was longer than the first one. Has it helped you to meet him again? And then, you know, what do you feel for the future in terms of being able to keep in contact with him and having been a part of his life?
So meeting him, yes, it's really, I mean, from my point of view, it's that reassurance that I'm not having to wait 18 plus years, or even when he goes through teenage adolescence, there's not going to be that rebellion that Kerry's going to have to deal with, because I'm been allowed to now be within the family, essentially. And that's reassuring, because one of the worries I had was, is he going to have all these questions? Is there going to be that rebellious kind of thing that could ultimately harm him mentally and have some loads of questions that if there wasn't that involvement could bring up a lot of turmoil? And obviously that's not what's beneficial, but this is. The future, it's incredible to believe that I'm going to see him grow up. I'm gonna obviously be there. I'm not gonna be this person that he knows about has never interacted with past being 9.5 months. It's unknown, because obviously we don't know what the future holds, but it's the incredibleness of I'm not going to have all these worries and things go around my head, because there is this openness, and I'm probably not explaining it well, but...
No, I think you really... Well, I'm getting it, and I'm quite simple, so if I'm getting it, everybody else will get it, so don't worry about that.
So knowing that I don't have doubts, I'm not going to have questions, I'm not going to have worries, like, I still... Before Kerry made that contact, my worries did go, are they safe? Is he sleeping well at night? Is he eating? Is he drinking? What's his favourite animal? And like, I don't have to now know or ask these questions because he's going to tell me.
Yeah.
He's going to tell me that his favourite is the ball pit.
Oh my
God. Yeah. I don't have to read. Yes, it's still the letterbox.
Yeah.
I'm going to know this. Yeah. And it's incredible because I don't have to read it as if it is just a story coming to me on a bit of paper.
Yeah.
It is alive. This is life, and this is.
And I guess just my reflections on that would be that I guess that you only hear what. Sorry, I just wind a little bit there. I guess that birth parents only hear what adoptive parents will tell them. And in actual fact, that might not be the stuff that you want to hear.
Not be the stuff we want to hear, but also, yeah. I mean, I had no doubts that what Kerry was saying, it was true, everything she'd say.
Yeah.
But from what I know from other birth parents is that they've been told lies about their children.
Okay.
And that's detrimental to both parties, like mm-hmm. both families.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was always that reassurance and confidence with it. If that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah. The facial expressions are amazing with you two, honestly. it's like sitting in a pub just having a drink with two people who are actually really, really good friends and taking the mickey out of each other, so it's very good. So I guess just before we wrap this up, I'm kind of, I don't want to tempt fate by saying this, and Charlotte, you've touched on it a little bit, but I guess what if there's some what ifs with this. This is quite new. You've met him once, whilst you get on, which is quite clear. It's very clear to see that you do get on, and it's a healthy relationship. I can tell from you both because you know you literally not stopped talking before we recorded, and then you went a bit shy after that. But what could be the what ifs in terms of, you know, especially when it comes to your son, if something does break down a little bit, or you know, if I don't know, you one of you goes through a rough patch in terms of, you know, I don't know, when he gets to the age of, I'm not going to give you an age actually because I've got three boys and you don't want to know what age they go through it, believe me, but have you thought about that far ahead, or are you just taking each day as it comes and working through it, and do you know what, you'll find your way, or what have you agreed in terms of the future and the what ifs?
So from my point of view, I think, so what we agreed is that we would do a face-to-face contact three times a year, around about Easter, sometime in the summer, and near sort of his birthday and Christmas. Mm. It will probably end up being more than that. And like I said, we have these sort of ad hoc phone calls and FaceTimes in between as well.
Yeah.
I think, I know it's going to sound really naive, I can't see a relationship breakdown between me and Charlotte, because actually, like you said, you know, what if something really bad happens? We've both been through so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't affected the relationship at all. If anything, it's gotten stronger. I do think, as James gets older, his thoughts and feelings will have to be taken into consideration as well. But he's, yeah. I mean, even now at such a young, he's such an easygoing, gets on with everybody kind of child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing as well. But by having these sort of this introduction so young, she's not a huge deal in his life. That's not to say that she's not a massive person in his life, but she's not like a scary big thing. It's just Charlotte, yeah. You know, she's just Charlotte, same way that I'm just his mum, he's got just his dad, just his nan, you know. It's not anything intimidating, it's just completely normal for him. So yeah, I think, hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it if it has to. But
yeah,
Charlotte will always be my friend, so me and Charlotte will always be friends, and she has no say in that, I'm afraid, Charlotte. this is how I make friends. So I just tell them, like, you're my friend now. You can't escape. But
has she got you chipped, Charlotte, so that she knows where you are and everything? Yeah. Literally, sounds
she's
like
she's
it,
actually,
it?
Yeah, she's actually locked in the basement. Yeah, so I think I really don't see it going wrong, and I know that is really naive because he is so young, it is early days, but it's just a very natural friendship and natural relationship.
Yeah.
So for me, I think I've got every sort of hope that it's going to go fantastically for him.
And what about you, Charlotte?
Um, Yeah, I mean, I can't see it breaking down. I'm really open and honest with things that are happening in my life and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with Kerry. It is, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it.
Yeah.
I know part of my head is like, if there is a breakdown on that side and if for every reason it was to discontinue, I would respect that, because at the end of the day, Kerry's making the best choice for our son. It's not my right to say what she shouldn't and shouldn't do. Okay. It's me. That's how I just feel personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, is about respecting them. It's being that open and honest. But yeah, I personally, I can't see it going like downhill. I can only see it just getting better and better.
Yeah. Well, I have to say I'm in awe of both of you, because, you know, this wasn't a thing when I were a lad, and we talked about direct contact maybe happening once a year, but it was very kind of sketchy, you know, whether that would happen. So to hear that you guys have kind of connected with each other, I guess my last question to both of you is, bearing in mind how you've done it, Kerry, what would be your advice to somebody who was kind of listening, who was thinking, okay, I want to do this, I need to do this for my child or my children, what would your advice be to them?
So actually, the one thing I did forget to mention, that is, I did speak to obviously social services and Barnardo's about this before I made the contact.
So you didn't just randomly go off and just...
I kind of did. So I actually, like I said, we met back in February, and I actually spoke to, so it's Barnardo's that facilitate our contact. I spoke to one of the social workers there before that meeting and said, we are thinking of offering direct contact. And they said, we think it is a fantastic idea. We think in this relationship it will really work, but please don't do anything yet. We want to gauge Charlotte's opinion of it without really asking her. So I think what their plan was originally is, because I know that Charlotte goes to some of their support groups, was to raise it at a support group to get to see if she would be receptive to it without saying this is going to be offered to you directly.
Yeah, okay.
Just to sort of tell what her feelings would be. Because actually, if, you know, if it wasn't something she was comfortable with, it can be quite horrible having to say no.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's what their feelings were. Mm-hmm. But obviously then COVID hit, and it just felt like, you know what, it's now or never. Like I said, it was the age thing where he was so young that he couldn't really remember. That wasn't lasting. Like, he's got a fantastic memory. So that isn't lasting very long at all. So it was kind of, like I said, it was right, let's do this now. We did speak to Barnardo's about it after, I know Charlotte spoke to Barnardo's after we'd made contact. So there was that support on both ends.
Yeah.
And I'm also still in contact with James's old social worker.
Mm-hmm.
So who Charlotte knows as well, and I sort of talked to her on like a friendly level as well, and she also thought it would be a really good thing. So obviously not necessarily from her professional offering advice kind of way, but actually is like, I know you two people and I know this will work really well. So it was, you know, don't do it without talking to social services or social workers. It's a really scary, and you need all the support you can get. So
so that is your
advice.
Don't do it without
don't
speaking
act
to
impulsively like I do, but make sure you also involve social services and use the right channels. Obviously, hopefully COVID won't
be around for
situations up. So
fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? If COVID hadn't happened, then maybe you wouldn't have done it. Who knows? You know.
Exactly.
You've just no way of telling, have we?
No.
And what about you, Charlotte? What would be your advice to actually even a birth parent or an adoptive parent listening in terms of and dealing with this, what would your advice be to each of those?
Obviously, it was all varied on situations.
Yeah.
My advice or saying would be is to know that there can always be a positive out of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
There is always the potential that things can progress. It's about knowing and personally acceptance, knowing that it can happen, and to not give up the idea that, oh, it's just so many more years. Because Kerry mentioned that he spoke to Barnardo's, it kind of ticked in my mind. I remember them asking me to attend training for potential adopters, which was just like, that is making so much sense as to why they are. I had an open mind once that judge made the decision. I was like, I was going to be open. I've always said to Bernardo's, like, if they want my address, if they want my number, if they want that, they can have it, because that's not me restricting, that's them doing that. And I think it is just about allowing that to be there in the first place.
Yeah.
Because it's, but yeah.
I think you've put Charlotte out a little bit. I could see her, the cogs in her brain going, oh, okay.
Like, potential adopters is be open-minded, because we're not monsters. Obviously circumstances are different for everyone.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's what's best for the child or children involved.
Yeah.
It's a benefit for both birth families and adoptive families, but it is for the child. It can be such a great thing. And I think this is just proof of how special and how amazing it can be for everyone.
Yeah. And I think, first of all, I want to thank you both. And it feels almost an honor to listen to the both of you talk about it so openly, because it's very rare that we hear stories like this. And I think that, you know, as someone who's kind of thinking about doing something at the minute along these lines, it kind of opens your eyes and your mind and changes your kind of your views on things because of the kind of way the world is and the way that, you know, maybe some social workers, not all, but some social workers maybe approach it, and the fear and all those kinds of things. And I think that that's probably both sides. I don't think it's just one-sided. And I'm totally in awe of you both. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing. And I feel like this probably will be a very popular listen for a lot of people. So thank you so much, guys.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.